This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Hello and welcome to the Total Saints Podcast. We are the weekly Saints podcast, your home for all things Southampton Football Club. This podcast is being live streamed on YouTube, Facebook, X, Instagram and Twitch. So a very good evening if you're watching along live. And our podcast is supported by our loyal Patreon community. Without you, we couldn't make the show each week. So a huge thank you as always. Coming up on the podcast, the regular season is over and it finished with a much needed win at Leeds. A decent performance too. Going to review that game. And we now know that it's going to be West Brom in the playoff semi-final. The away leg is up first on Sunday afternoon. So we'll preview that game and we'll make some more quality predictions. My name is Martin Stark and joining me this evening, Steve Grant is the owner of Saints Web. Glenn Delacour is writer of the blog League One Minus 10. And we've rotated the squad ahead of the playoff semi-final. George Rees-Julian is Southampton reporter for the Daily Echo and joins us for this one. All underpinned by our TSP patrons. This is episode 277 of the Total Saints podcast.
Your home for everything Southampton FC. From dedicated Saints insight to exclusive interviews. Live on YouTube every Sunday and available to download wherever you listen to your podcasts. This is the Total Saints Podcast.
Now, as always, we start with a big shout out to our Patreon community because their monthly contributions support our show. There are four tiers ranging from £5 to £20 per month. And aside from supporting the podcast, each of the tiers has different perks. You get access to an ad-free version of the podcast. We also do some live events as well. And we're going to be hosting our next live show on Thursday. That's this coming Thursday, the 9th of May in Eastleigh. We're going to be doing it in live in a pub. It doesn't get much better than that. The show is going to kick off at 7 at Steamtown Brewery, which is just around the corner from the train station in Eastleigh. If you have a ticket, then we look forward to seeing you there. If you'd still like to join us, it's not too late. There are less than 10 tickets remaining. So if you'd like to come along and chat football over a beer, then do click the link, which we've been sharing in our socials. And if you're interested in attending more events and meetups like this in the future, and you want to get involved in supporting the podcast each month, just head over to patreon.com/Total Saints Podcast. So Ipswich needing only a point at home to an already relegated Huddersfield meant there was next to nothing at stake, really, Ellen Road, certainly for us anyway. Saints were already confirmed as finishing fourth, but we needed a good performance. Steve, you were there. Was it worth every penny of that £47?
Oh, God. I mean, no, but no. What we got was a very good performance, I think, from more or less from start to finish. There were little flashes in the first half where Leeds got at us, but at the end of the day, they're a decent side in this division, and they're always going to have their moments. But I thought we looked excellent on the counter attack in the first half. Second half didn't really make the most of the opportunities that we had on the break for whole kind of various reasons. But having got the goals in the first half, we defended pretty well second half, I thought. I mean, Leeds fell into this really weird trap of basically trying to walk the ball into the net. for the majority of that second half, and you could tell the growing frustration in the ground, to the extent where I think the ball went back to a centre back on the centre circle, and the crowd were actually demanding him to shoot with about 5 minutes to go. It got a bit silly, but no, we put bodies in the way of stuff when we needed to, but for the most part, I think we kind of kept them at arm's length for that second half. And yeah, job well done. Difficult to kind of know how much you read into it in terms of if we were to meet him again at Wembley in 3 weeks' time. But I think at the end of the day, get out of there with the result and the performance. I think the performance was probably always going to be more important than the result in this one, just to show that we had a semblance of a system that was functioning again after the last couple of weeks where we've not quite been at the races. And yeah, I mean, obviously switched the system up to three centre backs, Walker Peters and Manning playing a lot higher as wing backs, but also offering protection against Leeds' wide threat when they were on the attack, which I think was important, and I think that was a good spot from Russell Martin, who obviously knows the way that Daniel Farker likes to play, from their time together at Norwich. But yeah, I mean the system worked, and I mean, let's be honest, Flynn Downs back in the team, all of a sudden you see him on the team sheet, everyone just breathes a huge sigh of relief and thinks, okay, right, midfield should look a little bit controlled. And yeah, we had, for the vast majority of that game, we had the run in the midfield. Leeds central midfielders didn't really do an awful lot. They didn't impose themselves on the game. And Downs, Smallbone and Aribo were able to kind of play their way around them and through them quite comfortably, I thought. All in all, yeah, very satisfying. So yeah, onto bigger and more important things on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely, Glenn. It seemed to me that extra week of training helped. That was something that we'd highlighted last week, wasn't it? Because we were playing Saturday, Tuesday, and then all of a sudden he had a week to spend with the team and a week to potentially look at something different too.
It's interesting. We talked about possibly, you know, playing a proper back three a few weeks ago, but if you've only got 3 days between games, there's not enough time to get that all sorted. Even though it's a formation that probably at various times in their careers most of the players will have played, but having a week, you know, having a full week, not only was there the boost in energy, but you know, there was obviously a plan that could be hatched. I think Russell Martin, like Steve said, I think he looked at Leeds and he looked at Farker and the way he likes to set up and just thought this will work against them. The midfield was remarkable. You saw it with Flynn Downs in the first sort of 5 minutes. I think he got the ball and ran forward about 50 yards with it, with no one getting anywhere near him. Walker Peters did it the from the other side, you know, from the right hand side as well. And it just seemed to me that Leeds have got the four players up front, basically. And once you got past them, they reminded me a little bit of Manchester United's forwards. They're not interested in tracking back at all. So the two lads in midfield who aren't the best were just swamped. And we've seen it ourselves this season. If you don't protect the back four, then it doesn't matter who's in the back four. They're going to struggle. You know, we've had this a few times ourselves, which comes back to something else Steve said last week about Leeds having a lot of the same problems that we have. And I think we did really, really well to exploit them. And then the new formation, I thought, suited absolutely everybody on the pitch. It just you know, got the best out of the fullbacks. I think it enabled Aribo and Smallbone to both play 90 minutes because they don't usually. Usually they're knackered, and the two of them got through 90 minutes. When the substitutions were made, you know, we had like Joe Rothwell coming on, so I was a little bit concerned that the midfield might go, but because of the setup and the way we were playing, he just slotted in, and we still kept that defensive screen in front of the three centre backs. And I agree with Steve about the performance being more important than the result. Even if Leeds had equalised in the last minute, you know, when we'd made all the substitutions, I don't think it really would have mattered. You know, we'd proved that, you know, what we set out to prove. And it was just great to have, you know, we tried something different. And the fact it worked is an absolute bonus. You know, you don't often get these games where, you know, the result is secondary. And yes, of course, we've lost a few games, so it was nice to win. But the performance, I thought, was excellent. And there wasn't a single player I thought it was kind of below an 8 out of 10. I just thought everybody was, you know, all the subs that came on, you know, the ones that played any sort of significant amount of time. I just thought everyone did their job, and it really, really couldn't have gone better. So, you know, I don't think it has a great deal of significance regarding the a potential meeting with them again at Wembley, but it will certainly show us that you know like the two wins against West Brom, that there's certainly nothing to, you know, we shouldn't go in with an inferiority complex, put it that way.
Yeah, nothing to fear. What a difference a week makes. George, you were there as well yesterday. We talked last week about the importance of heading into the playoffs with some sort of momentum and maybe a little bit of form, and they delivered all that we asked yesterday.
Yeah, I agree. I think Russell Martin sort of played down the importance of pre-playoff momentum. He says that the teams who finish third and fourth are the ones who usually go up, and that is true, but you don't usually get a team that finishes fourth and they've lost loads of their games just before the season ends. I think if you look at the last 10 years, it's only Huddersfield who've lost three of the last four and still won the playoffs. But for Southampton to end with a win against a Leeds side who could have gone up, like, we can't forget that they could have been celebrating at the end of that game, winning promotion. They didn't turn up. And I do think the fact Ipswich were winning and Ipswich were going to go up, perhaps that sort of played into why Leeds, like Steve said, they were just trying to pass it into the back of the net. They seemed to lose a lot of their confidence as the game progressed. But going into the games against West Brom now, that's practically the perfect result. Russell Martin made tweaks before that West Brom game and they worked. He's done it again now against Leeds. And although he says that some of the stuff they did yesterday may not do again against West Brom, I kind of think they will do the same thing against West Brom, because if you think back to that, you had Jack Stevens as the left back inverting, almost creating a back three, and you had Ryan Manning coming a bit deeper, being like that wing back role, is it the same way he was in the second half? So there's a lot of things you can take from the way they won that game and be confident going into the semi-finals against West Brom.
I don't want to get too far ahead, Steve, but we were hoping to see our best 11. And do you think, I mean, there was a couple of raised eyebrows for sure when the team sheet came out, but do you think that is the team that will deliver in the next couple of weeks?
Possibly, barring maybe one change. Possibly, I don't know. I do wonder whether the back three with the wing backs, whether that was a specific one-off situation, as we saw with the, as George mentioned, the West Brom away game, where we changed it up with Jack Stevens as kind of a floating left back, holding midfielder type thing. But I think, I mean, as you say, like, few eyebrows raised when the team sheet came out, because especially the way that the Saints media team drew the lineup, because it had Howard Bellis as a midfielder. And you're looking at that and thinking, okay, what the hell's going on here? But I think ultimately what's probably just happened is they had a template set up, and the one player that they weren't sure of ended up just being in that midfield role. But yeah, I think from a system perspective, I mean, it obviously worked yesterday. Whether playing wing backs against West Brom will have the same effect, I'm not sure. But I guess, as George said, there's kind of argument that maybe it was a little bit like that up at the Hawthorns anyway. Ryan Fraser played left wing and was excellent that night. And was it, I can't remember who played on the right that night. Was it a Dozy maybe?
No, it was Kyle. But we remember we did that thing with Shay Charles where he was kind of tucked in and he went in behind Walker Peters when Walker Peters went forward.
Yes. So
it was a strange sort of tactical setup we had that day, but it worked.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I would, let's be honest, having seen the result and performance at Leeds, then I don't think anybody would necessarily complain if the same 11 lines up in the same system at the Hawthorns on Sunday afternoon. I think they've shown that it works against good opposition. I mean, it's the way the fixtures have fallen has kind of almost worked perfectly. Now that once we got to the position where automatic was out of the equation, having that last game against comparative opposition meant that we could try the formation against a team that was looking to attack us. And you would imagine West Brom will be reasonably attack-minded in the home leg on Sunday. So, yeah, I think that's probably been useful as a good sort of dress rehearsal for it.
I wonder if the social media graphic was part of the mind games. I don't know. I think it might have been Alfie or yourself, George, that noticed yesterday that I think Kyle Walker-Peters wasn't warming up with the rest of the defenders. He was warming up with the forwards. Is that right? Did you spot that as well?
Yeah, Alfie was the one who picked that up first. But yeah, he was doing that, which I thought was quite interesting because we have seen him obviously play more as a right winger. If you think back to the game at Norwich, they had Jack Stevens at right back and Kyle was the right winger. So I suppose, like Russell said as well after the game, they don't like to get too fixated on systems, and perhaps in the game, if that's something they needed to shift to, they'd have had the ability to do that. From speaking to Kyle after the game, seemed like the system they played is what they've been training with all week, and they seem quite happy that they've now got something else up their sleeve that they can use in the playoffs.
A couple of goals to talk through as well, Glenn, because I think they deserve to be talked about because they were pretty decent. Great first goal as well. Some good work from, I mean, Flynn Downs keeps that ball alive, doesn't he? And then obviously Che as well. So that was good to see and at a good time.
Well, Che obviously decided he was going to be the Che Adams that is strong and can hold defenders off, which he doesn't always decide to do. But yeah, he kind of battered Glenn Kamara out of the way. And that was a... The pullback thing is obviously something that they work on because that's where the space is. And it was
four unmarked at the far post was quite
something. Oh, there's a lovely photograph that all the Leeds fan sites were posting, which is as Adams crosses the ball, they've got six defenders and the goalkeeper all looking at the ball, and we've got four players at the back post. I think Aribo's there, Walker Peters is there, and
so that's the Leeds equivalent of David Brooks against Cardiff, then.
Yeah.
That screenshot.
Pretty much. But, Adam Armstrong didn't really connect with it fully, but he got enough on it that chocolate wrists couldn't keep it out. I think he's a dreadful goalkeeper, and he's won the Golden Glove, hasn't he, for the season, which is remarkable given what we saw from Leeds' defence yesterday. Because I thought Ampadu and Rodon was shocking as well. They just let runners go the whole time. Awful players they seem to be, but they've obviously done well over the season, so yeah, that was a good goal to start things off, because I think that kind of really did put a dampener on any fireworks that there might have been. And it was quite nice to see, and I was watching on TV, but it was nice when they went over to Ipswich and showed that, it was still 0-0 at Ipswich at that time, and they showed the sort of like everyone beginning to go mad in the crowd.
News getting through.
We've caused that. That's good. And obviously they didn't need us. They didn't need us in the end, but it was a nice moment to see a goal we scored being celebrated somewhere else.
good to help them out. Steve, the equaliser was a bit poor, wasn't it? I mean, Stephen's given the ball away, terrible clearance from Harbour Bellis as well. But does the blame lie with any of them, or was it just like midfield lack of options for passing the ball out?
I mean, both of those certainly take an assist on that, I think. Stephen's had the time and the space to pick a pass and chose to delay, and that allowed... Yeah. That allowed them to come in and close him down. And then, as you say, Howard Bellis, 9 times out of 10, he connects with that clearance and it goes up to the halfway line and nobody bats an eyelid. But yeah, this time he's managed to shank it straight to Piru's feet. I mean, they've still got a little bit lucky. He's hit it really well, but it's took a deflection. And I think McCarthy probably gets a good hand on it if that deflection doesn't happen. So a little bit unfortunate, but architects of our own downfall there, unfortunately.
Yeah, as we've seen before. George, just talk us through the winner. I mean, fair play to Kyle Walker-Peters for not giving up on that second goal, but the pass from Jan Bednarik was pretty decent as well to spot it.
Yeah, it was an unreal. Yeah, it was an unreal pass. I think Junior Firpo thought it had gone out because he just seemed like he was completely asleep at left back. But it was basically something at their fluid best, wasn't it? The way they can just ping the ball long. Kyle's absolutely skinned him, and then he's put it into Will Smallbone, who's quite good at those last man runs, those late runs into the box. He seems to score a lot of his goals from there. I think we asked him about it earlier in the season, and Alfie joked that I was saying to Will that he only scores tap-ins, but a lot of the goals he scores are because he makes those runs late on. And I think when you do play him in the positions where he can do that, rather than when he has to sit so deep and try and help play out from the back, you get the best out of him. And I think that's a goal that really shows why the system worked the way it did, because you can just get players getting forward as opposed to getting to the byline and you've got maybe one option in the box. You don't find them, or you do find them and they miss the chance, and you kind of just waste a really good opportunity that way.
That was great to watch, definitely. And Glenn, obviously Ross Stewart coming on too. It wasn't a mirage. He was there. We were told that he was going to get some minutes on the pitch. I thought it might have been a little bit more, but he was on for 10 minutes. He's still got that opportunity to fire us to promotion.
Why, when Che Adams got injured, it was about the hour mark, wasn't it? I know it's not too serious an injury. Ross Stewart was warming up, and obviously someone thought it's a little bit too long for his for his first game, because it could potentially have been in 40 minutes, you know, at that stage. So they put Camel Dean on up the middle, which I thought was a worthwhile experiment as well. You know, we called him for that a few weeks ago, mainly because he doesn't do anything when he plays on the wing. But and I actually thought he did okay as well. But it was good to see Ross Stewart come on. I mean, I'm still kind of excited to find out what sort of player he is. I've never really watched, because he got injured and he was obviously going to be out for ages. I don't think I've ever even watched the highlights reel of his goals to see what sort of player he is. And
he looked quick, you know, to me. He looked quick.
He's obviously fairly quick. He's got a decent touch. You could see that from yesterday. And the one header he went for, despite being 6'4" or whatever he is, he didn't get anywhere near. So, so taking that in isolation, it looks like he wants the ball to feet. He wants the ball in behind. And he's working the air. He needs work, but no, it's it's great to have him on the bench. Obviously, the potential's there with him. He's scored goals wherever he's been before. Obviously, he started off well in the Championship with Sunderland before he got his first injury. So it could be a proper fairy tale. But whatever happens, I'd rather have him on the bench than the alternative centre forward we've got, and we all know who I'm talking about. So it can only be a good thing. It's just hope he doesn't have any reaction to the 10 minutes. And, he won't be expected to start games before the end of the season, obviously. No, it's a nice to have should we need it. And he'll obviously be very hungry to do well, and everyone will be willing him to do well. So I'm looking forward to finding out exactly what sort of player we've got.
I'm going to ask you all for player of the week in just a moment. I mean, we had to cancel it last week because there wasn't anybody that was worthy of a nomination. This week, I think we've got the absolute opposite. Steve, just final words on Leeds. I mean, it's a big if we do end up playing them again. I've come away from this weekend thinking, actually, we've got nothing to fear. Watching, Daniel Farke yesterday, I think he's unlikely to spring any surprises on us. And that's left me feeling a lot more confident than I did on Friday afternoon.
I mean, Leeds don't have a good playoff record. I think they've been in 5 playoffs and never got promoted.
100%.
And although, admittedly, we're also 0-1. So it's, I mean, you look at sort of historical records in terms of how a club kind of gets through these difficult games, and neither of us are particularly strong on that. But yeah, I agree. I don't think Leeds are going to ever spring a surprise on anybody. I think they are what they are. They've got their way of playing, and the attacking talent they've got available is usually good enough against most opposition. But yesterday they came up against a team on a reasonably comparative level, and our system, I think Russell Martin kind of outthought them, really. The way the midfield was able to play around them, that was the key battle. And we basically stopped, certainly in the second half, we stopped the ball getting to their key wide players. And you keep those two quiet, and that's kind of half the battle done, really. Mm-hmm. And you know that if you can get at them going the other way, they are prone to leaving the back door open. As Glenn said, it's quite mad that Meslier's got the golden glove. But basically, a lot of the reason for that is that at Elland Road, from the start of the season, teams have been going there basically just looking to defend deep and not really try and hurt them. Whereas more recently, look at the likes of Blackburn, who went and won their 1-0, and deservedly so. And they went and thought, well, no, we've got arguably the best finisher in the division. Let's use that attacking talent and let's go at them, because we know that defensively, if you put them under pressure, they're getting no protection from the midfield in front. So yeah, it's an opportunity for. Be very interested to see how Norwich approach it on Sunday, because I wonder whether Norwich's team, their squad setup, kind of cries out a little bit to play that wing back system, I think, because they're quite heavy in terms of they need to pack the midfield, I think, Norwich, in their games, with the sort of talented players that they've got. So I kind of fancy they'll replicate what we've done, and that may be their best opportunity to get through themselves.
Their best chance. Let's do our player of the week then. If you're watching along live, then by all means, jump on and let us know who stood out for you, especially if you were there yesterday. George, I'm going to give you the honour of going first. It could be anybody, really, couldn't it? We've got like four or five to pick from. Who's the first name on the social media poll tonight?
I think Flynn Downs, just the way he comes into the team, and just they look so much better just with him in the team. We don't get to watch every single team play in the Championship this season, but I struggle to imagine there's any team who need him as much as Saints do, if you know what I mean. Like, just the way when he comes in, they're just a totally different side, aren't they? For the reasons everybody spoke about all season. And if he wasn't there, I don't think what they did would have worked as well, because he can take the ball deep, but he can also, as Glenn said earlier, he can drive with it, and he is actually probably a really underrated attacking threat. So I think for just how good he was, and the fact that he was also able to come off and not get injured, that's an extra bonus.
That is a bonus. Yeah, I think we're all quite pleased when he managed to get through and get off. Glenn, who else are we adding to the list? Obviously, Flynn Downs are given.
I thought, bearing in mind that Leeds have got all their attacking threat, Crescencio Somerville he's player of the season in the Championship. And we made him look a bit like a one-trick pony. He just wanted to get onto his right foot the whole time. And Walker Peters and Harbour Bellis defended that superbly, and the concentration required to sort of like keep him in check was good. So I'd go Carl Walker Peters, but if I can, and I'll obviously set up the second goal as well. That was superb. But I'd like to say something about the forwards as well, because the forwards, with the two of them playing centrally, it would have been very easy just to sort of be static and be marked by the two centre halves. But I thought Adams had a marvellous game, because he just kept coming short and Rodon didn't want to go with him. So he was holding the ball up really well and knocking it on. Adam Armstrong was sort of like playing in the gap between Firpo, who's useless, and Ampadu, and they couldn't handle him either. So I thought the two forwards were excellent. So take your pick from those. But if I had to go for anyone, it'd be Kyle.
Steve?
Yeah, I'd have added Shea Adams, simply because, yeah, it was, as Glenn mentioned earlier, it was one of those games where you know Shea's well and truly in the game, and he's properly up for it. And the way he was holding off both of their centre backs under a fair amount of sort of physical abuse at times, and yeah, the way he's able to play these little sort of round the corner passes and bring others into play and just release attacks all the time, I thought was excellent. And yeah, obviously we kind of hope that the sort of early indications on his knock are accurate, and it's only let's not kind of take any risks here. Let's give you a rest for 25 minutes, half an hour, rather than anything more serious. But yeah, we'll find out.
Good to have some options as well. We'll get that polled online in just a moment.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
With fourth place confirmed last week, we knew when the playoff semi-final fixtures would take place. We probably bought our tickets as well, and we now know the opponents. So it's going to be West Brom. George, a couple of good wins against them. There was the 2-0 back in February at the Hawthorns, 2-1 win at home back in November. But obviously, Russell Martin was very quick to say that counts for nothing going into the playoff semi-finals. But it does a bit, right?
Yeah, I definitely think it does. I think if you're going into a game and you know that you've beaten that team twice that season and you're going to play against them twice again, you're going to back yourself to probably beat them at least once. And especially with the way they played at the Hawthorns, that was only the third time that West Brom had lost at home this season. And yeah, they looked dangerous in bits, but Southampton were by far the better team. And to go there for the first leg is obviously so important in a playoff semi-final, because if you lose that by a couple of goals, then you're going into the second leg basically out of it already, and Southampton can go there and I think they can get a couple of goals like they did in the league. And West Brom would have been the team that I'd have picked, to be fair, out of all of them. I think, yeah, they've beaten Leeds, but they were never going to be able to play against them. And the games against Norwich, I think Norwich are probably set up in a way that frustrates Southampton more than West Brom were. Two draws, although one of them at home obviously had eight goals. The one away was just a boring game, I thought. There wasn't really much to it. And going to West Brom, I do think there's a good chance that they can get a win in that first leg. And I do think the fact that they've beaten them twice is going to play into it, even if players and managers don't admit it.
That was a great game, wasn't it, back in February, Glenn? Because that was where we, I think, was that the one where we all thought that the unbeaten run would come to an end? And then, of course, it didn't, did it? It happened in the week. And then we had
we'd lost to Bristol City, and it was the first game after that. And it was obviously a big test to how we'd bounce back. Little did we know we were going to lose to bloody Hull and Millwall the following week. But anyway, we went to West Brom, and that was obviously the most difficult game out of the four on paper.
Yeah.
Flynn Downes was injured, but that, or ill or something. And on that particular occasion, we got the structure of the team exactly right. And we dealt with West Brom have a lot of aerial threat. They're known for their set pieces and whatnot. And so having Jack Stevens in the side, you know, helped with that. And he pulled one really good sort of clearance off from under the bar, I recall. Mm-hmm. I think that was the game where Bednarek caught one as well and got away with it. So, yeah, I mean, it could have been a dodgy game, but we played really well. David Brooks scored an excellent goal. Fraser scored an excellent goal as well. So it's... yeah, it was definitely one of our better performances. And we had that bizarre thing where their manager got sent off, didn't he? For kicking the ball before he'd gone out of play.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was, you know, that was a good performance. West Brom have been a bit of a mixed bag recently, haven't they? They've had similar sort of results to us, lost three. They won yesterday, but that was against Preston, who've now lost five in a row. And we saw them when they played at St Mary's, and they couldn't be bothered. And according, you know, I just read the quotes from their manager, Ryan Lowe, and he said that they couldn't be bothered yesterday either. And he was very, very disappointed in Preston. So I don't think West Brom are going to go into this with a massive amount of confidence from recent form. But against that, they've kind of knew they were going to be in the playoffs, didn't they, for quite a long time. And they never had the carrot at the top two at all. So maybe they've gone off the boil a little bit. And then all of a sudden it looked like Hull might sort of get in there and disrupt Norwich and West Brom. But no, West Brom ended up finishing fifth. But I don't think they'll be massively confident going in against us, especially because of the you know, the two games that we've had previously. And that game at the Hawthorns that you're talking about was a really good one from us, and relatively comfortable in the end.
How important is that first leg going to be, Steve? I mean, do we just go there and like keep it tight and then get back to St Mary's?
I mean, are we a keep it tight team? I wouldn't.
First time for everything.
60 something goals conceded. I don't.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I don't. We're think not going to go there and keep it tight, are we?
Yeah, I don't think that's a feasible strategy, and I mean, it doesn't suit the way we've played all season. Doesn't suit the players that we've got. The only way we know to play is to go and try and win the game, and that's fine, because more often than not this season, we've proven that we can do just that. So, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, if we put the same level of performance in as we did at the Hawthorns back in February, then we'll win the game again. Absolutely confident of that. But there's always still that nagging thought in the back of your mind of, oh, this is actually a big game that means something. We've not done particularly well in those this season.
Yeah.
So that's the one kind of counter sort of caveat to everything is, okay, now stuff's getting real. This is where it is, all or nothing. Do we have the stones for it? And I guess we're about to find out, lads.
I have a question, and Steve will know the answer to this, I'm sure. Is there VAR in the semi-finals and the final?
Final only.
Right, okay. So we don't have to worry about that horrible bag of spanners.
Not until Wembley.
Not till Wembley, should we get there.
Not just yet. Okay. If and when. George, there's a few players and staff with experience of playoffs in the squad. Mixed results, it's got to be said. But will that help as well, a bit of experience around the place?
I don't see why it wouldn't help. But then at the same time, you can talk about experience, but until you get the chance to experience it, you're never going to have that experience. And you can, if you've lost once, then it's going to give you that extra bit of motivation. But at the same time, if it's your first time playing in it, that's going to give you just as much motivation. And if you're going into the playoffs, you're going to want to win. But to have some of the players like David Brooks, James Bree, who've been there before, and they can kind of, I suppose, let people know what it's like to be in a playoff when you've got that two-legged game. But the professional footballers who've played in the Premier League, they should know exactly how to motivate themselves for the biggest games of the season. And sort of like Steve touched on there, they're the games where they have struggled a little bit. And I'm a little bit worried that perhaps it could be one of those where if they do concede one and two, it quickly becomes three or four times this season. And you can't afford to do that in the playoffs because you do need to keep it tight. And although Southampton aren't that kind of team, they have shown that they can do that at times this season. And so I don't know, I'm not too sure how much it can help, but I also don't see how it can't help to have players who are experienced in it.
Do you think, George, as well, do you think that the home advantage in the second leg is going to be important for us or not? Because I can imagine it, like, if it doesn't go particularly well in the away leg, then the atmosphere is going to be so tense, isn't it? It's going to be a bit nerve-wracking.
Yeah, I think I would always rather play at home in the second leg, because if you do draw in the first one, then you know you're taking a decent result back to your home stadium where you're going to have 30,000 people willing you on to win. But like you said, if they don't win that first leg, or if they don't look very good in that first leg as well, it's going to be a completely different atmosphere to if they've taken a good performance into the second leg. So I suppose I just have to wait and see on that. But I don't see why you wouldn't want to be in front of your own fans. You see national teams quite often do it. Wales are one especially. They always want their last game of a campaign, because for a team who would tend to come second, that is usually the one that is going to get you qualified. So if you play that in front of your own fans, you do have that extra added sort of buffer where you can just, you have the supporters behind you, and it can only help, I suppose.
Friday night.
Bad example, George. That one.
What, Wales? Bad example.
Worked so well in March.
Yeah, same team for you, Glenn, for this game, do you think? Or another week to think about it, another week to prepare? Do you stick with the same 11?
Personally, I would, but I don't know if that's, simply because it suited all the players that we had on the pitch. As I said earlier, it just suited them all down to the ground. And I think we look really good. The only problem I have with the sort of 3-5-2, if you want to call it that, is that sometimes the progression up to the forwards is just made a little bit more difficult by having one less. You haven't got the wide players, and that's usually where some space is. So that's the only issue I have with it. And in the second half, we didn't really create bucket loads of chances, but there was still enough, for it to work. So I would be perfectly happy if they kept exactly the same 11 in the same formation. But equally, I think we've got to trust the manager on this one. We've got another week to prepare. We've done well against West Brom before. And if he decides to bring in a David Brooks or a Ryan Fraser to play, to play up top with Adams and Armstrong and go with the back four, then that's what we'll do. I do hope we don't do the, even though it worked at West Brom, I do hope we don't do the floating left back thing again, because it does my head in from a balance point of view. But
they know about it now. It's not a surprise.
Yeah, and I think that's the great thing about yesterday, is that it gives us an alternative. So if it's not working, if you go for the back four and it's not working, then you can switch it up and everyone knows what they're doing. So personally, I'd go for the same, but I'm not on the training ground all week. So I'll let Russell Martin decide that one.
It's the plan B that we were asking for months ago. Let's do some score predictions. I think the weekend was maybe the 14th game in a row where none of us picked up a point in our little league that we've been doing. George, I'll give you the honour of going first as well with this, if you like. I don't know if you're playing for Alfie or whether we'll have to get in touch with him and get his score prediction as well. But if I could trouble you for a score prediction for the first leg at the Hawthorns.
My score prediction, I don't know what Alfie's thinking. I think it's 3-1. That's the sort of the score that comes straight to my head. I don't think Southampton are a team who are going to keep a clean sheet, but I also think they're going to score a couple of goals like we saw in the game previously, and especially first leg. You'd hope that with another week of training, they're going to be right up for it. They're going to be well-rested, but also raring to go get a couple of goals. I can imagine Adam Armstrong, he tends to score a lot of the important goals this season. If he gets one, then I think they could get a few.
I'd be delighted with that. Steve, how do you see it playing out?
Well, because my predictions have been so awful this season, I'm going for a draw.
Okay.
So I'm going to go for a highly entertaining and slightly ludicrous 2-2 draw.
Again, I think we'd set off for that as well. Glenn, what do you reckon?
I'm going to go the opposite. I'm going to say it's going to be quite cagey. First leg tends to be tighter. You know, I think both teams will want to get through the first leg and still be in the game. So I don't think West Brom are going to go into it with loads of confidence about playing us. So I think they'll be quite cagey. But I'm hoping we get have enough about us to get the job done. So I'm going to go for a 2-1 win in the first leg.
2-1 win. Okay. If you're watching live, do put your score predictions in the comments. And we'll see how much better you are at predicting the scores than we are. The other news this week is that Saints are going to appoint a new women's manager before the new season starts. George, I know you covered this story this week. Do you just want to bring us up to speed on that and talk us through the thinking and what's going on there?
Yes, obviously Marianne's been the head coach basically since the club reformed. She's been there for the whole way through getting up to the Women's Championship. They just had their best ever finish in that league, most points they've ever got in that league, but they're disappointed not to get promoted because I don't think I've ever seen a team before go through a whole season and not draw a game. They won loads of games, but they lost loads of games. And that's ultimately what's cost them playing in the WSL next season. But I think it's quite an interesting thing that she's not obviously left the club. She's just moving up to a higher job. She's in part of the recruitment process to bring in a new head coach. And she was already doing a lot of the stuff with the women's and girls football program. She was overseeing all of that and coaching. And I think it's probably quite an important step that now they're going to have someone who's just the coach and they're going to have Marianne carrying on with that role. And the balance of that, you'd imagine, is going to be massive, because if you're spinning multiple plates, then you're going to get burnt out and there's only so much that you can do of both of them. So to have someone come in to just be the coach, it's going to be important that they obviously get the right person, because if you're going to bring someone completely new into that role and shake up everything, then it could go badly, because Southampton, since they reformed, have just been on a massive upward trajectory. And if you get someone in who kind of halts that, especially with how tough the Championship's going to be next season, you've got Pompey coming into it who look pretty decent, but you've got Newcastle coming into it who've got a lot of money. They've chucked so much money at getting themselves up and they want to be in the Women's Champions League by all accounts in a couple of years. So they're going to be a tough side to beat. And for now at least, it could change. There's just one promotion spot. So it's an interesting time to do it, but I think it's probably one that they need to do sooner rather than later, because Marianne maybe has taken them as far as she can as a coach, and now she can focus on all the other bits, and it'd be interesting to see who they bring in.
Did it make sense to you as well, Steve, reading through that? Obviously, as George says, Marianne's basically staying on at the club, and she's obviously someone that they respect a lot.
Yeah, I mean, she's obviously been vitally important from the very beginning, hasn't she? As George rightly says. And yeah, I mean, it was interesting. I remember having a brief chat with Alfie when we were leaving Anfield after that god awful events sort of awards evening, I kind of said that it kind of felt there was a gut feel that was more likely to happen than not come the end of the season, because as George says, if you're spinning so many plates and the role is so important now, there's so much going on in that department of the football club. Someone's got to be full time on actually coaching the team, and I think if you can't sort of devote full focus to it, then something's going to fall by the wayside, unfortunately. And yeah, it's been, I mean, certainly the impression I get from all the quotes from the players this season is that they all feel really frustrated that they've not won the league. Mm-hmm. Now Palace have outscored everybody by a long way, but they've not. I think we still won the same number of games, possibly.
I think maybe one less, but it's similar, yeah.
But as you say, we don't do draws. We've like a lot of those sort of tight defeats against teams sort of quite a long way below us are the ones that have ultimately cost us. And you can't, I mean, maybe if you had a head coach who was full time dedicated to the role, then maybe the focus is a little sharper, and maybe the players are on the performances a little bit, just that little fraction. I mean, the whole, that sort of horrible Dave Brailsford marginal gains. Nonsense. But in professional sport, those little things do matter and they do add up. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see who they appoint. I mean, as far as I'm aware, there's no names in the frame publicly at the moment. I don't know if you've heard anything, George.
No, not yet, no.
No one internal who could step up.
Well, I think if I'm right, I think the assistant, or at least someone who was part of the coaching staff for a long while, has moved on. I can't remember exactly the name, but I don't suppose, unless they were to move someone from one of the youth men's team in, sometimes you see the Premier League sides who've got women's teams do a sort of similar thing. But I would think that if you're going in for promotion again next season, you need someone who knows women's football, because it is a lot different to men's football. So if they were to move someone across, it'd probably have to be someone who's already working in the women's game. And I don't know if they necessarily have someone who's ready for that.
It's going to be a tough gig, though, Glenn, with this nonsense of only one team going up. We played really well last season, again this season, and you've still got one team that are going to kind of dominate the league.
Yeah, you kind of read things occasionally written about, you know, making the WSL bigger. When we played Arsenal in that game, the Arsenal manager came out and said, you know, Southampton basically proved tonight that there's no reason why the WSL shouldn't be bigger. Because I think they only play each team twice, so the league program is only, you know, 22 games or whatever. So there's definitely scope for making it a little bit bigger. But obviously you can't rely on that. You know the rules. You would assume if they're going to make that change to make it a 16 team league or whatever, that it would be known at the start of the season, and you'd know the top four were getting promoted or whatever it would be. So, but yeah, you can't worry about that. The rules are what they are, but they have changed the level three, because, I mean, the rules as they stood last year meant Pompey would be playing Newcastle in a playoff. That's how Saints got promoted. But obviously they're promoting one team from each of the North and the South level three league at the moment. So that's changed recently. So, with any luck, it will change, but yeah, I think it will be a tough gig, because the expectation will be there, regardless of who's in the championship, to do better than they've done this year. So they're going to have to. I mean, it doesn't really matter where you finish between second and eighth or whatever. So, you know, next season is going to have to be better. They're going to have to be challenging for the top spot for longer, and still be in with a shout for longer than they were this season.
A big job. That's pretty much it for this week's episode. Don't forget, you can follow Total Saints Podcast on all the social media platforms. We are at Total Saints Pod. You can drop us a DM on any of the socials. You can email us via the website if there's anything you'd like to share. And don't forget to check out the merch store as well, shop.totalsaints.co.uk. We're also on Patreon. That's what I was talking about at the start. That's where you can support the podcast with your monthly contribution. It's patreon.com/Total Saints Podcast. There are four tiers on there, ranging from £5 to £20 per month, and each of the tiers comes with different perks, including some shouts at the end of the podcast for the patrons in our Francis Benali and our Mick Shannon tier. So thank you to Dave Melton, Mark Atkins, Andy Hollis, Anthony Thompson, Saints in Exile, Gavin Ford, James Harron, Nikki Nicholson, Southampton NY, Drew Dyer, James Kibbe, and Mike E. They're all in our Francis Benali tier. And cheers to Colt Baker, Dave Ernsberger, Ed Busy, Nick Higston, Phil Cook, Nick Reed, Paul Stewart, Phil Horstrop, Matt Hall, and Mark Littlewood, who are in our Mick Shannon tier. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Glenn. Thanks to George as well for jumping on. Have you enjoyed your first season covering Southampton? Did you get time for that?
Yeah, I have enjoyed it, although maybe not some of the games, like the one at Leicester. That's probably the low point, but it'll be even better, obviously, if they get promoted, won't it?
Yeah, what an end to a season that would be. Thank you for watching.
Every game will be like the Leicester one.
Yeah, maybe.
Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. We will see you at Steamtown Brewery in Eastleigh. If you're coming along, that's for the live show on Thursday night. We're going to aim to get that underway at 7 o'clock. And we're going to be back here for a live stream after the first leg of the semi-final. That's going to be on Monday, the 13th of May. Make a note of that. That's going to be at 7:15. So we'll see you then.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.